Good morning, everyone. So I want to thank you guys for coming. This is kind of the advanced crew. Hopefully everyone was in my talk yesterday. Was anyone not able to make it to my testing talk yesterday? Wow. Okay. Well, the assumption is that this is meant to show you some of the advanced topics around software testing with Visual Studio 2010. So yesterday what I did is I spent a lot of time kind of going over the foundational elements around how a manual tester can author tests, can execute those tests, can capture a lot of data, and then feed those back into the Team Foundation server instance so that then the developers can open up those bugs and get a lot of really rich, actionable data so that they can actually understand what's going on with the bugs and then hopefully fix the bugs as well. So I have a lot to show you today. I will do my best to try and bring the people in the room who weren't here yesterday up to speed. But if you find yourself getting lost, maybe compare notes with your neighbor. And the session yesterday was recorded, so you can definitely go back and check that out online and kind of rehash some of those topics. The other thing, too, is that I make all of my presentations available on my blog. In fact, all of my demos, with the exception of lab management, are possible to complete by downloading a VHD that I make available on my blog. And so you can go to my blog. It's the address is up there. Download the VHD, either for Hyper-V, which I recommend for performance reasons, or you can also run it in Virtual PC or Windows Virtual PC. And then I have 9 documented hands-on labs as well, which will take you through about 90% of what I've been showing here at Dev Days. So I definitely encourage you to check that out and send me an email as well. So my email address is actually the last part of my blog. It's briankell@microsoft.com. I answer all my email and would love to interact with you and answer any questions you might have. I also just want to take a moment to say what a great audience you guys have been. So this I've done speaking all over the world, and I was going to dinner with Scott Hanselman last night, and we were just talking about how nice you guys are, what great questions. I'm not saying that to butter you up so you fill out great evaluations for me, although that would be nice, but truly, really has been a great experience at Dev Days, and I also want to recognize the local Microsoft subsidiary here for organizing a great event. This is my first Dev Days in the Netherlands, and I hope to come back for many, many more in the future. So I just wanted to address a few of the questions that came up yesterday first, because I don't want to get stuck in a demo and then forget to come back and address them. I showed some of the support that we have for test automation yesterday. And of course, test automation is very dependent on the actual target platform that you're addressing. And so our ability to watch the manual tester and pick up which actions they perform as they interact with the application under test, and then be able to play those actions back either during the course of a manual test or during the course of a fully automated coded UI test, and I'll show a little bit more of both of those later on. Our ability to actually play those back is dependent on the target application. So out of the box, you can see that we have support for Windows Forms, for WPF, SharePoint applications. Some of these are kind of will work but have some known issues with them. So for example, working with some Win32 applications is not fully supported. MFC is not fully supported. We just released a beta of support for playing back tests within Firefox. So one of the unique things that that we do is we make our entire testing suite extensible. So we actually are going to be building our own extensions for this and working with partners as well, such as control vendors, to continue to add additional support for other target platforms as well. And so what you can do now is you can actually record a test in Internet Explorer, and then when you play it back, you can pick Firefox to play that back in. And that works with Firefox 3.5 and above. And the really nice thing there is that because we're operating at the DOM layer, if there's something that renders differently within IE versus Firefox, you might be able to surface a bug with the way that your application behaves in one or the other. So I think that's it. This is all actually in the documentation. Once again, I'll make this available on my website as well, but we'll continue to update this matrix as we continue to deliver more and more support. I also had a question yesterday about what do you do if you have existing test cases that are in Word or Excel? In the last release of Visual Studio, in fact, 2005 and 2008, we supported the ability to create manual tests in Microsoft Word or Excel, and then you can link those up to Team Foundation Server. But the integration was very loose. If you saw my demos yesterday, you saw how we're very tightly integrated. A test case is a work item within Team Foundation Server. And so you probably want to think about moving those manual tests and those either the Excel documents or the Word documents into TFS. So there's a power tool that's available. It's called TCM Import, and that's available on CodePlex to help you actually move all those test cases over. Someone also asked a really good question yesterday about what if I have my test plan that I want to share with my customer or share with other stakeholders who may not have some of these tools installed. And so there's a great power tool. I actually got the name of it. It's called Test Scribe. Test Scribe is available from the Visual Studio Gallery out on MSDN. So you can download Test Scribe. What it does is it takes your entire test plan, and then it downloads all the relevant information and exports that as a Microsoft Word document that you can then share with others and say, hey, this is what we think we're testing. Does that map to what functionality you think the application should really perform? And then the Firefox plugin can also be downloaded off of the Visual Studio Gallery. The other thing that I wanted to briefly touch on, and this isn't a marketing talk, but I have a lot of questions about how do you actually get these components. And so this is the new SKU diagram for Visual Studio 2010. If you take a look at this compared to 2008, you'll notice a couple of differences. Of course, Team Foundation Server is kind of still at the heart of most of what we do around application lifecycle management. The SKUs have been dramatically simplified, so we don't have the role editions for Architect Edition and Tester and Developer and Database Professional, because customers told us that, hey, you know, I'm an architect in the morning, a developer by day, I'm a tester by night. Team Suite may be too expensive for me. And so what we've done is we've taken a hard look and refactored a lot of those capabilities across really what's a Russian doll model SKU layout. And so you have Professional at the bottom, which is pretty much the same as it was in 2008. And then you have this premium SKU, and you have Ultimate as well. And so I'm not going to go into all the details about what's in each individual SKU, because that's all available on the website, but just wanted to make you aware of that. And we have this new Test Professional product as well. And Test Professional is really targeted at those manual testers on your team. So they don't have to go out and buy the full-blown edition of Visual Studio and install this huge thing on their computer. They can just install Test Professional, which I was showing yesterday, comes with Microsoft Test Manager. That's the WPF tool that you can use to author, manage, and execute your test cases. And then lab management is another thing that I'll be showing today, and that's a new capability that you can purchase and add on to Team Foundation Server. And so I'll be spending a lot of time today talking about lab management, but this is the tool that can help you set up, build, deploy, and test workflows so that you can fully automate the process of going straight out of your build server, pushing those out to a series of virtual machines, running automated tests, and then even connecting to those and running manual tests as well. So I promise a spectacular demo later on. It's either going to be great, and it's, everything's going to work, or it's going to fail spectacularly. I basically have to carry around my own little data center up here, so it should be an interesting morning for all of us, I hope. And then finally, this is another breakdown. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about what this slide is, but I just want to make you aware that I'll make this available in my slide deck, and this kind of shows you from a test perspective what some of the important components are that you may want to think about licensing. So actually, before I jump into demos, I want to talk about this book, which is Choose Your Own Adventure. Has anyone read these Choose Your Own Adventure books? Awesome. There's always like two people, and I know the rest of you know what these are, but no one wants to admit it. So I used to love these books. The idea with a Choose Your Own Adventure book is that you get to a certain point, and it says, like right here, it says, all right, you're in a submarine, and you've encountered a bunch of great white sharks here at the bottom of the ocean. And it gives you a couple choices. The first thing it says is, if you decide to fire the special propulsion charge to get to the surface, turn to page 20. Okay? If you decide to wait quietly, hoping that the shark will go away, turn to page 22. So, anyone have a preference?
Fire?
All right. Awesome. Sounds good. So, we're going to fire the torpedoes and turn to page 20. And it says that we fire the special propulsion charge and we zoom up to the top of the surface and we become unconscious and we die. So that's not good, but what do you learn to do when you read these books? Well, as you can see here, I'm keeping my thumb in the page that I came from, right? And so I go back to the last place and say, you know, I really didn't mean to fire that special propulsion charge to get to the surface. What I actually meant to do is I actually meant to wait quietly for the sharks to go away. And it says you wait and you wait and you wait and more sharks come and you die again. So these are the books we read as kids, right? And I found this awesome blog post where this guy, Michael Nigel, went through and he calculated all the different outcomes that can happen when you read one of these books. And if you take a closer look here, you can see here that we've got red, which is an unfavorable death. I don't know what a favorable death is, but that's an unfavorable death. And then we've got orange, which is like, you know, really bad, but you don't quite die. And yellow is still not good. And as it turns out, over 80% of the time, you'll actually die or have some sort of unfavorable outcome. And so, you know, what I'm talking about here is really probably not too unlike some of the software that we build or some of the software that we've been asked to test, you know? And so, wouldn't it be nice if you could say within your software, you know, not only do we have a bug, which chances are we usually do when we're building software, but how did we get here? How can we put our thumb in the page and go back in time and understand what actions did we take to get to where we're at? And then more importantly, what can we do to actually correct that so that hopefully we turn that 80% of the time from an unfavorable outcome into 90 or 95% of the time into a favorable outcome? And so this is something that we're doing in the product called IntelliTrace. And I'll just take you through a couple of the ways that that IntelliTrace works. And the let me just boot into my other VMs here. I told you I'm running my own portable data center. It's really exciting. Airport security loves me. So give me just a moment there. Talk amongst yourselves. And so with IntelliTrace, basically, the reason this fits into a testing talk is that you can create these IntelliTrace files which capture really rich information about exactly what was happening within the application, not only at a given point in time, but historically as well. And you can capture those either by running an F5 debug session from within Visual Studio, or you can also have your testers capture those as well. So in yesterday's talk, I talked about the idea of test settings and how you can say that when we run our tests, we want to capture an event log. We want to capture system information. We want to capture a video. And all that information can feed back to the developer when you file a bug. But we can also capture these IntelliTrace files as well. And so you can have a tester that goes out, reproduces a bug, captures this IntelliTrace file, and then when the developer opens up that bug, he can look at that IntelliTrace file and go back in time and understand exactly what's going on. So we'll just give a couple more seconds for my VM here. I also had a question yesterday about whether or not MS Test supports 64-bit. And I don't remember if the person was in this room or not, but yes, MS Test in 2010 does support 64-bit, so I did confirm that. Almost there. Okay, so this is our application we've been testing with, and it's just a basic e-commerce site. Some of you have seen me play with it a little bit. And so what I want to do first is actually come into Tools and Options and show you how IntelliTrace gets configured. So this is the Visual Studio 2010 release candidate. Everything you're seeing me do right here, you can actually perform if you download my virtual machine. And it includes the sample application we have here. And if we come down to IntelliTrace, you can see that there's two modes here. So first of all, I can turn IntelliTrace on and off. And then if I choose to enable that, the first mode is events only. And events only allows me to capture a wider range of events that happen across my application. Those might include, when did I read from or write to a file? When did I read from or write to the registry? When did an exception happen? Even if that exception got swallowed by a framework like WPF that likes to swallow a lot of exceptions, we can actually capture that within IntelliTrace and help you go back in time and figure out what's going on there. The other thing we can help you do, if you turn this on in the verbose setting, is we can capture events and we can also capture call stack information as well. And so what you can do is you can say that when I entered this method, what variables were actually passed in for that method, or what were the values of those variables? And I'll show you debugging under both scenarios here. The other thing I should talk about is that the way that IntelliTrace works, and this is just where you can configure your events, and you can define custom events as well. The way that IntelliTrace works is it actually rewrites the MSIL for your application. And so it will definitely have a performance hit. The performance hit is going to vary based on how big your application is, as well as whether or not you're collecting just the basic events or everything related to the call stack information. So it's not something that you definitely want to have turned on all the time. What I tell people is that generally, like in the manual tester case, you may want to have a lightweight test settings file, and then most of the time you're running with this lightweight test settings file. And then if you find a bug, and you may even decide not to send an IntelliTrace file at that time, but the developer may say, you know what, I took a look at the bug, you definitely have an issue here, can you please go back and capture an IntelliTrace file? And then at that point, you might want to rerun the test and turn the test settings up to a full diagnostics and capture that IntelliTrace. Yes? Does it need the source code or does it need debug information? Great question. And please feel free to continue to ask questions. Thank you. It does not need the source code in order to capture the IntelliTrace information, and it can be based on a release build. Now, if you want to use IntelliTrace as a developer to then step back into the source and understand exactly what's going on there, then you will need the source code. But we automatically do the work of if you store your symbols associated with your team build, and so you've got, 10 builds that have happened, and then the tester goes out and captures an IntelliTrace based on a build that happened last Thursday, we'll automatically, in the release candidate and RTM, we'll automatically find the right symbols and help you actually attach to the source so you can understand what's going on there. So, excellent question. So, here's my Tailspin application. We'll just come down to About Us. And you can see that we've got a problem here related to the About page. So, at this point, I'll come back into Visual Studio. We'll go ahead and break. And then over the right-hand side, we have my IntelliTrace window. So you can see we have a bunch of different events that are happening. And so just to explain what's going on, we've broken into our application. It's still executing. But now we can look back historically and see exactly which events have happened within my application. And so this is all being driven off of the list of events that I've had enabled from tools options. And so if I wanted to have registry events turned on, I could turn those on, for example. And if we come back up here, we can see that there's a bunch of exceptions that are being caught and thrown and caught and thrown. And so if I keep on going, I can get a clue here for what might be happening. You can see the last thing before this series of exceptions was we tried to load this XML file. And so, okay, that might be a clue about what's going on. Let's then take a look at the next exception. The next exception says that we have a parsing error when we're looking at that XML file. So, okay, well, that's told me a lot about what's going on. If you think about what you may have had to do in the past, you may have had to run this application, you found that you had a problem, so you stop the application, you go back, you set a breakpoint, you rerun the application, maybe the breakpoint was too far, or maybe you set it really early, so you're pressing F10 to step through, and it could take forever to find this stuff. But with IntelliTrace, you can quickly scan the list of things that might be clues about exactly what's going on, and then go back in time and see what you're looking at. So we'll go ahead and stop the application. And if we go into where that content file was, we open this up. Sure enough, there's a problem with this particular file. So we'll save that and then redeploy. And there we go. There's our excellent corporate bio, all in Latin. And that's one bug fix. So that's how you would use IntelliTrace in a very simple scenario to look at it from an events perspective. But let's do something a little bit fancier. I'll first come down to Tools Options and bump up IntelliTrace to use the events and call information. And then we will F5 our application again. And we'll take a look at something that's a little bit more complex. Now remember, everything I'm doing here is within the context of F5, but I could also have my testers go out and generate these IntelliTrace files as well, and we would get basically the same experience here. So I'm going to go into model airplanes and take a look at this. Remember this MSIL is being reauthored, so it does take a little bit longer. Maybe we'll look at the Contoso Cloud Explorer. That looks like a cool plane. We'll go ahead and add that to the cart. Definitely want one of those for myself. And you know what? My nephew's having a birthday next week, so maybe it would be nice to add one of those for my nephew as well. And as you can see, we added it to the cart again, but quantity remained at one. So this is a little bit more of a tricky bug, but let's see if IntelliTrace can help us out with that. So we'll go ahead and break. And you can see here that, once again, we have lots of gets that are happening. Well, one of the things I can do is I can actually filter this. So I happen to know that, you know, I made two posts as part of adding these items to my shopping cart. And so we can search for post, and we can find that, you know what, I think the second post is actually where the problem might be, because that's where it failed to actually update the information in the cart. So we'll select that. And then I can switch to calls view. And this is where I start to, actually, let's go back and double click on that first. Somewhere in here, there's add item. And so basically, this is going back historically, and it's showing me everything that happened with respect to calls either within my application or calls that were made to other third-party libraries or to the .NET framework. And what I can do is I can start drilling into this to go back in time and see exactly what was happening. So we made a call to add item. And then there was another call to add item. And so this is an ASP.NET MVC application. And so there's all these calls getting passed back and forth between the presentation layer and the controllers and so on and so forth. And so if I keep on drilling down into add item, then eventually I come to the last add item down here. And this is where the actual work is taking place. And if we scroll over, we can see that it's already taken me to the source code for where this happened. On the left-hand side, you can see that this is kind of a VCR scroll bar that allows you to go back and forth through time. So I could also step back and forth throughout the historical call stack information by using that VCR gutter menu control. And so at this point in the application, we'll go ahead and just F10 step into what was happening. And remember, this is F10 historically, so this isn't actually executing new code, but it's showing me what happened within my call stack. And we'll press F10 again, and here's where things get interesting. So this is the adjust quantity call. And so this seems like it might be important, because this is where the quantity is actually being updated. And so what we can do is we can actually take a look down at my locals window and see what was being passed in when this method call was made. And so you can see we've got product, we've got item.quantity, and so the new quantity was actually set to a value of 1. And so basically what we're doing is we're saying set the new quantity equal to 1, and that's creating the bug here. So if I go ahead and stop out of this, what I actually want to do is I want to say that the quantity should be equal to the existing quantity plus the new quantity that's being passed in. And that's just quantity. So now if I rerun this application, looks like that item's already in my cart, so I have the 1 already. And if we come back to add another item to my cart, there we have two. So my nephew's going to be happy. We're going to get him his fancy paper airplane, $50. That seems like a ripoff, but whatever. It's his birthday. And everyone's happy. Okay, so that is IntelliTrace. And let me just power down this VM. And start up the other one. So for the rest of today, yes, please.
Very often the most difficult bugs to fix are bugs that are happening on the load test, threading related, things like that. Does IntelliTrace offer any help in that area?
Does IntelliTrace support multiple threads? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Yes, it does. It does.
Can
you use it together with load tests? So yes, you would be able to. So basically, like if you're load testing, well, first of all, it depends on the type of application, because IntelliTrace does require you that you have managed applications. Thank you. Yes, I think it's just still shutting down the other one. So once that shuts down, we'll start up the other one. So yes, load tests, you can run IntelliTrace while you're conducting a load test, as long as it's a .NET framework-based application. So if you're load testing an ASP.NET application, great. If you're load testing a JSP application, we won't be able to collect IntelliTrace on that. So yes. Mm-hmm. So I think the question is where are the IntelliTrace collectors actually installed? That's actually a really good question. And while we're waiting for the VM to power down, let's go ahead and show you what this looks like from an architectural perspective. And this is also available on my blog. So if you're interested in checking this out at your own pace, you can do that. So this test architecture is basically a slide that I put together that describes what, if you took advantage of everything we're doing in Visual Studio 2010, what does your architectural landscape look like? And so at the heart, you have to have Team Foundation Server 2010. That is a requirement. In one of my talks yesterday, we had someone come up on stage and install Team Foundation Server 2010 in under 10 minutes. They had never done it before. So we've done a lot of work to make sure that if you've previously had problems getting TFS installed, hopefully that's something that that we've removed a lot of the friction around. So once you have Team Foundation Server installed, then you can set up a build server that can be on a separate server or on the same box as TFS. Then you can set up lab management, which I'll talk more about. Let's set that aside for now. And then you have this thing called a test controller. And the test controller is responsible for orchestrating tests that happen across multiple virtual machines or multiple physical machines, and then collecting all of the test results. And so that includes whether or not the test passed or failed. It also includes any of this agent information, such as IntelliTrace files or event viewers or video logs, any of this other information that you want to collect. And so to get back to your question of where should I install the software and what software gets installed, let's take a very basic example where I have a physical environment that has a database server and a web server. In this environment, what I can do is I can install a test agent on each one of these machines. What that does is that deploys the test execution logic, so effectively mstest.exe gets installed. And then what we also do is we install all those diagnostic data collectors as well. So the ability to collect IntelliTrace and system information and video recordings gets installed when you install the test agent. You don't have to have a build agent for this to work, so set that aside for now. We'll talk more about that during the lab management demonstration. But when you install those test agents, you can then configure each one independently. And so you can say that on the web server, it's really important for me to capture IntelliTrace information because it's an ASP.NET application that's being executed. On the database server, I don't actually have any of my own managed code being executed, so I don't need to turn on IntelliTrace, but maybe it's important for me to capture event viewer logs. Or event logs. And so you can turn on event logs, you can say what types of events you want to collect, and then all that information then gets aggregated and then presented collectively back as part of the test results. So does that answer your question? Fantastic. And I'll show you a little bit more within the tools how you configure that. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, so So I haven't tried it. I haven't set up a test environment that includes a network load balanced application. So I will caveat my response there. But I will say that you can set up IntelliTrace on multiple machines, and I would imagine that should just work. Like if you have a process that gets spun up on the one machine because it's handling the first request, then that would be captured by IntelliTrace over there, and then the next process that gets spun up to another machine should be captured and aggregated on that machine as well. Now, there might be a little bit of work involved for you to decide, okay, well, this request started off over here, and then the user ended up getting bounced to this server, so we need to kind of track that. But I think that all the data should be collected and aggregated. I'd be curious to get your results, so definitely feel free to email me, and that would be a fun one to dig into. Yeah. Okay, so that explains kind of logically how some of this stuff works. Let's see if my virtual machine is happy yet. So as you can see, I have four virtual machines all running on my local machine here. Okay. So for the rest of the 45 minutes we have, I'm going to show you the way that lab management gets set up and configured. We're going to all cross our fingers and do a deploy out to a virtual environment and actually run some automated tests as well. So to start with, let me show you this test that we were working with yesterday. So this should look familiar if you were in the talk yesterday. The idea with this particular test is that I open up the website, I click on model airplanes, I add some items to my cart, and then I type in some various quantities into the text box and make sure that I can't, for example, enter a negative number into the quantity and expect that to be honored. So that should be pushed back to the original quantity if I've typed that in. And so yesterday what we did is we ran this as a manual test. While we were running this as a manual test, we turned on what's called an action recording. And so what we did is we captured all of the interactions that the manual tester had with the application that was being tested. And what that did for us is it allowed us to then play that back when we're playing back the manual test, and we can fast forward through some of those steps, making the individual tester more productive. You can imagine, you know, you may have 100 different tests, and you want to get down to the very, you know, last step so that you can confirm that the shopping cart total is correct. Well, don't make me go through the first 100 steps manually or first 98 steps manually. Let's play that back and actually speed up the job of the tester and make them more productive. And then what we did is we said, all right, we've reached a point in our application where we feel like things are stable enough that we want to fully automate this test and turn it into a regression test. And so what we did after that is we came back into Visual Studio. And we created what's called a coded UI test. And the coded UI test starts by taking either the path that you record through an application, or you can take the action recordings the manual tester created and turn those into a fully automated set of test steps as well. And so what you can see down here is that these test steps actually correspond to the test steps that we authored. And so when we recorded the action recording and associated that with that individual test and then converted that action recording into a coded UI test, what it did is it created these methods. And if we drill into these methods, for example, here's where we are opening up the website. And so if I go to definition, there's a code behind here that says this is what we want to do when we go to the website. And so this is a little bit abstracted. So what it's doing is it's basically opening up the website by passing in this particular variable. Let me make that bigger for you. And if we go to definition on the URL, you can see that these variables are actually stored further on down in this class. And so that's where the variable's stored. And the reason that we do that is that we want to help you isolate the logic that's actually going on in terms of clicking the application and finding a text box and doing all of the kind of driving logic behind the website. And then the parameters that you might want to override later on, for example, if you deployed this to a different web server and you wanted to change the URL that it was pointing to. Or maybe you wanted to change, instead of typing in -5 into the quantity box, you want to type in -1 billion and make sure that that also behaves correctly. And so what you can do is you can take a look at the way that this has been created, and you can see how some of that overriding logic might work. And so if we take a look at the attribute on this test case, you can see that this has a data source of Microsoft, Visual Studio, Test Tools, yada, 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 and then it's pointing back to my Team Foundation server instance. And so what that means is that there's actually some test parameters within this test case that we're pulling out and using that to drive our test case. And so if we take a look at that work item again, or that test case again, you'll notice down here that there's 3 parameter values. And if you look at test step number 5, it's actually referencing that. So to create a test parameter, you just say at, and then the name of the variable you want. And then this column, of course, corresponds to that. And then this will actually generate 3 different iterations of that test run. So we're going to run it once for the letter A, once for -5, and once for 0. And so the way, once again, that gets linked up back in my test case is we use that as a data source. And then at this step, where it's saying type new quantity into blah, 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 here's the variable UI quantity edit text, that's getting overwritten with this new quantity that's coming in from that test parameter. Likewise, if you wanted to bind this to another data source, you could do that as well. So that's pretty easy if you've ever done this with unit tests. It's the exact same concept. And so if I come into Windows and Test View, you can see all the tests that are in my solution. And if I look at the properties on this test, you'll see that there's this data connection string. And if I select the ellipsis here, it actually lets me select a database or comma-separated value file or XML file. And so if you don't want to bind to the test parameters, maybe you have another list somewhere or a database somewhere that you want to use to actually data drive these coded UI tests, you could do the exact same thing. So it's very interchangeable. Let's see, was there anything else I wanted to show you on coded UI tests? I mean, because it's source code, it really allows you to do a lot of different things. I mean, one of the things that that I'm not going to show you up here that you might want to think about doing is actually using resource files for things like URLs. So if you were pointing this out or publishing this to a variety of different VMs, and maybe the name of the database server was going to change for different virtual machine environments, or maybe the name of the web server was going to change, instead of actually hard coding the URLs in here, you might want to consider reading from resource files so that when you actually deploy it out to those machines, you might want to have a resource file that sits on those machines and then tells the test exactly what it should expect in terms of where the various virtual environment machines should be that it should point to. So that's one thing you might want to think about as you start making this real within your own environment. Another thing you might want to think about is how do you make this test fail gracefully? And so you can imagine that if you're familiar with unit tests, usually the way that you configure unit tests is as soon as there's a failure, we actually abort the test. Well, what happens if you get halfway through a coded UI test and you have, for example, opened up a bunch of browsers and you've initiated a transaction, and now you're halfway through running this test, and then we can't find a particular control and the test fails? Well, you may have lots of browser windows that remain open on those virtual environments. And the way to address that is actually with a using clause. And so if I refactored this source, and I'm not going to take the time to do this right now, but if I refactored this source, I could basically wrap all of these arguments within a using clause, and I would, instead of launching the browser during the first step, I would pull that out so that it says using and then Internet Explorer and then put in parentheses the URL that we're going to start with, and then curly brace the rest of the steps in here. And what that means is that once we're actually finished running this test, whether it's a pass or a fail, it's actually going to go ahead and close that application. And that might be Internet Explorer, it might be a WPF application you've written. There's a number of different ways that you can address that. And so there's a lot of best practices topics out on the team test blog. And so I'll make that link available when I post the slide deck as well. So it has a lot of these best practices in terms of, you know, it's a fancy demo up here and everything works, but when you actually take this back to your own environment, you may want to think about doing some of these additional best practices so that your tests are more robust and they scale when you push them out to multiple machines. So that's the test case. I'm not going to run it locally because I want to actually run this within a deployed environment. And so the way that we work with lab management is actually surfaced within Team Foundation Server as a build definition. So let me show you the way that works. If I come back to Team Explorer here, we have two build definitions right now. And the first build definition is basically just where I'm building my software. So if you're familiar with Team Build, this should look pretty familiar. We basically just come in here, we deploy our software out to this drops folder, and then we are actually building the Tailspin project. So nothing fancy at all there. What does start to get a little bit different is the way that we actually set up a build, deploy, test environment. And so if I open up this build definition, things should start to look different. So first of all, this is my environment for, or my build definition that's going to work with two different virtual machines that are part of a virtual environment. And one of those is a Windows Server 2008 web server. The other one's a Windows Server 2008 database server running SQL Server 2008. I could also have created multiple environments if I wanted to, and I could have multiple build definitions. So I could say, the first thing I'm going to do is deploy everything to Windows Server 2008. After that, I need to make sure my software behaves correctly on Windows Server 2003. That becomes multiple build definitions, which then interact with multiple virtual environments. If I take a look at my trigger down here, we've got a manual trigger. We could make that a continuous integration if we wanted to, although I wouldn't recommend that because some of this stuff takes a very long time to run. And then where this gets interesting is actually within the process template. So the process template I have selected here is the lab default template. If you just set up a brand new team build definition, you do have to come in here and change this from default template to lab default template. And the way that then surfaces itself is within a wizard. So if you click on the ellipses here, it's going to guide you through the process of setting up a build, deploy, test environment. So the first step in this process is to pick which environment you're going to be working with. And so this is the virtual environment that I defined earlier on. And so you didn't see me do this, so let me show you what that looks like. If I come back within Microsoft Test Manager, yesterday we spent all of our time in the Testing Center, Activity Center. If I switch down to Lab Center and I've got lab management configured within my TFS environment, then this starts to light up some additional capabilities as well. So what you can see here is that I have an environment, it's currently deployed, it's currently running, and in fact I can connect to that environment, and it's going to open up each machine within that environment in its own kind of like an RDP session. And so over on the left-hand side, you can see that we have my database server, which is deployed and running, and I have my web server, which is deployed and running. Once again, everything's running off my local hardware up here. So I can do it on my laptop, but of course, once you go back and set this up within your own environments, things will be much faster than what you see today. This is just really to demonstrate the capabilities. So what you can see here is that I have two virtual machines. I can interact with these just as you would expect. And I have this test agent that's running in the corner. And so what I've done in order to get to this point is I've created two gold images. And these gold images are really the base state that I want my software to then be deployed on and then tested to. Once I got everything into the state that I wanted it to be, I created a snapshot of the entire environment. So if you're familiar with Hyper-V, you're familiar with how you can create snapshots in an individual virtual machine. The way that we work is when you create a snapshot within a virtual environment, it snapshots the entire environment by creating two snapshots at the same time. So if I come over to the Snapshots tab, you can see that I've created a snapshot called Clean. And that's what we're going to roll back to every night when we deploy our nightly build. And so in my build definition, you'll see in a minute that anytime we start up this build workflow, we're going to restore to that individual clean workflow. After I deploy my software, then I'm going to snapshot again. This is prior to running any tests. So we want to have a clean state of the machine. We want to have what happens with the machine immediately after you deploy your software. And then after that, we'll go ahead and run the test. And the reason we take a snapshot before we run the test is, of course, that some of your tests may pollute the environment. And you may want to roll back to the state of the environment where the software is deployed, but none of the tests were actually run. So I've got my virtual machine running. You can see this test agent down here. Anytime you're going to run coded UI tests, you're going to set up the test agent to run in an interactive process, and that basically gives you this window down here where the test agent is allowed to interact with the desktop, launch applications, launch Internet Explorer, and so on and so forth. So if I come back to my Visual Studio environment, let me just reconnect this. Here's my build definition once again, and you can see that this is the environment we've selected. We can see the snapshot name is clean, so I've pointed it to that. So that's pretty straightforward. Now, when it comes to building the software, I have a few options. I can either pick an existing build from an existing team build definition, so maybe something that I ran last week at some point, or I can say that every time I kick off a new build deploy test workflow, I actually want to kick off that original build definition and build my software again. So that's what I have configured here. I'm saying there's this other build definition, it's called Tailspin Toys Iteration 2, and I'm going to queue a new build. So kicking off the one build would basically have a dependency on the other one. Deployment is where things get really fun. So what you can do is then say, after I've created my build and I've got that sitting in my drops directory, then I now want to run these deployment scripts. And so basically, I'm sorry for those of you in the back, I don't have Zoomit installed on this particular machine. But basically what we're saying is that on the first machine, which is my database server, image 2, on my database server, I'm going to run a file called c:\scripts/whack db deploy. And the idea with that is it's going to go ahead and deploy the database out to that database server. Then on the second machine, I'm actually doing something a little bit fancier, which is I'm referencing the actual build output. And so this build output is basically getting passed in to an ms deploy command that I have wrapped up in a batch file. So if you're not familiar with MS Deploy, it's basically a really great engine for taking an ASP.NET application and then pushing that out to an IIS virtual application. The next thing down here that I'm defining is that I want to take a snapshot after I deploy my software. And so I've already explained that one to you. And then finally, we have my tests. And so after I've deployed my software, I want to run my tests and have any of my automated tests that are within my test plan be executed automatically for me. And the benefit here, of course, is that for any of my tests that are automated, I can wake up in the morning, come into the office. Last night, I've already spun up my virtual machines. They've already deployed my software. They've run any automated tests. And the status of those tests has been reported back to my test plan. And so if we take a look at this individual test, in order to make this something that can be automated, I first went into Visual Studio and I created that coded UI test that I showed you a minute ago. And then I opened up the test case within Visual Studio and I went to the Associated Automation tab. Notice things are grayed out when I'm in Microsoft Test Manager. That's because you have to do it from within Visual Studio. You can't do that from within Test Manager. But once you're in the Associated Automation tab, you can see that I've bound this to my individual assembly and then I've pointed it at the individual method that's going to test this. Now, that doesn't have to be a coded UI test. That could also be a unit test. It could be a web test. It could even be a load test if that's something that you want to automate as part of your build, deploy, test workflow. Really, any test that you can represent within Visual Studio, you can then say, this is the test automation harness for ensuring that this test case, which remember used to be a manual test case, can be automated. So this is where you're all going to help me cross my fingers, because we're going to actually go through one of these build, deploy, test workflows. But in order to prove that it's real, oh, I hope I didn't save any changes there. Oh well. You're really going to cross your fingers for me. So in order to prove that it's real, I want to actually make some changes to the web application. And so if I come down to, let's see, what do we want to do? There's this bottom menu bar. Let's make some changes to that. We'll just make some really innocent changes here. But I want to prove that it's not smoke and mirrors, so I'm going to get some audience input. Can you tell me your favorite vacation destination?
Florida.
Florida. Hey, that's where I'm from. Awesome. Let me know when you're in the neighborhood again. And can I get, let's see, gentleman right here. Looks like you're married. What's your wife's name? Ilya? Lilia. Help me spell that. Like that? First A is an E? Oh, D. Lydia. Oh, I'm so sorry. Is that right? Fantastic. Okay, now I'm going to be in trouble if I put your wife's name in there and I don't put my girlfriend's name in there. So let's just do that. Fantastic. Okay, we'll go ahead and save that. And we will check in those changes. So this is Dev Days, The Hague. We'll check that in. And now we'll go ahead and kick off this build definition. So we'll queue a new build. This is the spectacular part. This is where things are either going to fail big time or be really, really cool, and you guys are going to clap and give me nines on the evaluation. So here, what's happening first? Well, first of all, what we've done is we've kicked off a new iteration, iteration 2 build. So as I mentioned, in order for us to actually deploy this out to the environment, we actually are going to depend on another build definition. And so that's going to be kicked off right now. We can double-click and drill in. If you haven't looked at the team build in action for 2010, it's really, really nice. It's basically based on Windows workflow, and you can come in here and customize this as much as you'd like. You can have it do all sorts of fancy things, build installer packages for you, reference, you know, install shield to kick off an MSI, any number of things. So it looks like this particular build completed, so that's great. And now what it's doing is it's kicking off the rest of the workflow. And so we can actually watch this if we want to. If we come back into my environment viewer, you can see that it's doing some stuff behind the scenes for me. And so the first thing that it's doing right now, I think, is it should be restoring to that snapshot. And yes, sure enough, it's restoring to that snapshot. So remember, we're going back to the clean snapshot, and we're saying restore to that, and then that's going to be the pristine state that we're then going to deploy our software onto. Go ahead and reconnect just so we can watch what's going on here. Now, generally, you don't want to actually have a connection active to the environment while it's happening, because if you were to start interacting with the machine, for example, you might get in the way of the automated tests that are being run. So I'm doing what you shouldn't do, but of course, it's my butt on the line if it goes wrong, so we'll see. Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Can you run multiple tests in parallel?
Can you run multiple tests in parallel? So no, I don't believe we do that. Well, basically, what we'll do is we'll serialize all the tests that are in your test plan.
Because our build takes 20 minutes, but our tests take about 5 hours, so if you could spread them out over several machines...
Oh, actually, yes, you can do that. So if you have multiple machines that are eligible for running your tests, then you can run those as multiple test agents. In this particular environment, what I've done is I've said that that I have one machine that's going to be the one where I'm running my tests. But if you have multiple machines which match the test agent tags that exist in your environment, and I haven't shown you tags, that's kind of an advanced topic, but you can basically configure it so that you can have multiple environments where you have, you know, the same environment or a similar environment with a web server and a database, and I'm going to run my tests across, you know, multiple machines like that. So yes, you can set up some of that logic. Yep. And so now it's restored to the original clean state. Now you can see what it's doing is it's waiting for the workflow capability to be ready. So this is the thing that I said that we would come back to. So in order to prep these machines, I installed the test agent, which we've already talked about, and I also installed the team build agent on these machines as well. And so the team build agent is important to participate in build workflows. And basically what we have going on here are two things. First of all, the build is getting copied down to the local machine in a temporary working area. And then it's also kicking off some tasks that are related to running those scripts. And so you have to have the build agent running on any machines that need to participate in that build workflow. There's a third agent as well, which I'm not using in this environment, but which is available to you, and that's the lab agent. And the lab agent basically allows you to set up network isolation or network fencing. And so the idea with that is that, let's say that you want to create an environment which is exactly like your production environment, uses the same IP addresses, the same machine names, and everything else. Well, how do you do that within your environment without causing network collisions to happen and where you have multiple machine names on the same domain? Network fencing allows you to do that and allows you to connect to the machine by basically tunneling through an RDP using a different address, but those machines still retain information about their own host name. So you can have my web server production, my web server within test, and set up the lab agent, and that's going to isolate everything so that you don't have any of those collisions. So this does take about 10 minutes. So if you guys have more questions, feel free to keep them coming. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where,
yes.
If there is an error there, it's hopefully propagated.
Yes, that's a great question. So his question is, if you have an error during the deployment, how will you find out exactly what's going on? And actually, we'll see that in a minute. Once my workflow comes back online here, you'll see that actually show up. Let me load the earlier report just so I can jump to that. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, you can. So by default, I think the timeout, it's rather generous. It's several minutes. But yes, you can have, there's a variety of timeouts, actually. Let me qualify that. So there's timeouts on the build, deploy, test workflow, and then there's timeouts for like a coded UI test. And so if we can't find a control within, I think it's 30 seconds, we actually time that out. But maybe you want to extend that as well. And that's all configurable within your test settings. So yeah, great question. So if we take a look at this earlier workflow that I ran, and we take a look at the build log, you can see the question that he was hitting on. So this is the output of my batch files that was being executed. And so if I had any errors that I was echoing back to the command line, we would see that as well. So this is actually just the MS deploy output that's happening as part of that script or that deployment script. Yes, question.
Does it run the VMs for the tests on the build server?
That's also a great question, because you can run the VMs on the build server, but I would recommend that you don't. And the reason for that, of course, is as you start spinning up multiple virtual machines, you don't want to bring down an important machine such as your Team Foundation server or your build server or something else that's going to stop the rest of your team from collaborating. And so the environment that we support, we basically run on top of SCVMM. And SCVMM has a model that allows you to use multiple VM hosts. And so those VM hosts are then evaluated at deploy time to say which VM host has the best resource allocation based on CPU or RAM or hard disk space. And then once we determine which VM host we want to deploy to, that's when we actually can push the VM out to one of those hosts. It also has the concept of what's called a VM library as well. So I'm not using that in my particular demo setup, but you might want to have a VM library that can either have images that are just saved in their natural state, or you can have images that are sysprepped. And when you spin up a new build, you might want to feed it product key information or different machine name or different RAM configurations. And you can feed all that in so that what we do is we spin up from the library and then we specialize that image by providing all of the information in reverse so that we can spin that up based on the sysprepped image. This is where I said that things would be either a spectacular failure or a spectacular success, and it looks like because I had to shut down some of my virtual machines, it looks like things are taking a little bit longer to come back online. Let me just debug this on the fly. So basically what it's doing is it's saying that the workflow controller can't talk to the workflow agent or to the build agents. Da, 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 da. I know it's administrator. Yeah, this is the problem with having to shut down my entire lab environment rig when I'm in the hotel room and then come back over here and expect everything to work. So you pretty much have to hope that everything finds the network connections again. You know what I'm going to do is I'm going to stop and restart this. And so we can stop that build. So I really want to show you guys how this works. Once it starts working, it's a lot of fun. I remember the first time I got this all set up, I pulled an all-nighter just playing with it. It's really cool to watch your builds kick off over here, to, you know, see everything get spun up automatically onto your virtual machines, and then eventually to, of course, run your tests. So let's try this one more time. Queue a new build. Of course, that should have kicked off another build of iteration 2. There it is. Okay, now it's shutting down and it's rolling that back to the clean state. Now while we're waiting on that, another thing that I can show you is the way that you can actually, bless you, the way that you can actually share this information back with the developer. So let's say that I'm a tester and I'm interacting with the virtual environment and I find a bug. Well, it's one thing to be able to share a video of what I did. It's one thing to be able to share an IntelliTrace file so the developer can open that up. It's also a great thing to be able to take a snapshot of the entire environment, hand that off to the developer, and say, you know what, here's the machine that you can connect to and see exactly what's going on. Today, if you think about this process with physical machines, a tester finds a bug, and the developer says, whoa, 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 don't do anything until I can get a chance to get over there or remote into it and see exactly what's going on. And so now the tester is blocked if they don't have additional hardware, or you've got to have a lot of additional hardware so the tester can keep round-robining to different machines. Well, the beauty of a virtual environment is that we can snapshot exactly where we're at, and then we can share that back with the tester or with the developer, and then they can open it up at their leisure and see exactly what's going on. Yes? Great question. So I think if you're asking whether or not I can create a snapshot from here, or if I have to use Hyper-V to do that. Yes, you can absolutely do that from here. In fact, off of this snapshots tab, you can see that I have a number of options up here. One is I can restore to an original snapshot. I can create a new snapshot, and I can also share a snapshot. And so if I click on share a snapshot, I can then save that out as a file. And then if I come back to my test environment and I want to create a bug, then I can just come down here and add that as an attachment, and then that gets linked back to the bug work item. I can also do that from the test runner. So if you saw me use test runner yesterday to actually execute some of these tests, and I find a bug right from within test runner, I can say take a snapshot and attach this to the results for this individual test run. Okay, so we're at the same point we were at earlier, just waiting for this to come back. Think happy thoughts. Oh no. Okay, well, I don't think that's going to work at this point. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually go back to another snapshot that I had created, and I think that snapshot number 11 works okay. So let's go back to snapshot number 11. And restore. And at least I should be able to show you what happens when you run that series of automated tests, because that's the only other thing we're waiting on at this point, is the ability to take those tests and run those in an automated capacity. So I promise you this does work very well when you're not like me and having to move, change your physical environments all the time and set up on the fly like this. But now what we're doing is we're saying that previously I deployed out to this environment and we took a snapshot at this point in time. So that's, you can see that's today's date, and that's the 11th build that I ran this morning. And so once that gets restored, then the next thing we can do is we can come back into our test environment, or our test manager rather, and we can take an existing test that has already been automated, and we can either run this manually, or we can then run this in an automated capacity as well. So if we select Run with Options, we can select the build that we were using. And that would have been, chained to this version of iteration 2. And we want to run against these test settings in this particular test environment. Let me just make sure my test environment is back online, and there it is. Make sure the test workflow gets set up. Okay, so my test agent's ready. We don't care about the build workflow at this point because all we're taking advantage of is the test agents. And so now, if we run this, oh, of course it doesn't. We'll just select a newer build there. So now it's kicking off an automated test run. And so now what's happening is it's contacting the test controller. The test controller is then going to look at the test agents that it's aware of. So it's already bound to these virtual machines. It knows what's happening within this particular virtual environment. It's then going to push that test logic, so in this case the DLL, down to this individual virtual environment machine. You can see that it has one test that it's running. My hands are off the mouse and keyboard. It's going to open up our web application, and it's going to run through that automated test. Yes.
Can you set up a testing center at the customer's location and get their test results back to the developers, because you might not have a network connection?
Yeah, so the question was, what happens if you have a customer that's running tests and you want to feed some of this information back to the individual development team and they're not necessarily connected up to your own team foundation server? Today, that's not a scenario that we support. It's something we want to look at doing in the future. But today, this is where you can clap, by the way. So thank you. That is something that we want to support in the future so that you can even do something like run in production and have IntelliTrace bound to a production web server so that if you get a call at 3 o'clock in the morning and you know that's the time that all the bugs happen, of course, and you want to be able to see exactly what was happening on that production server, you'll be able to take that IntelliTrace file and load that up into Visual Studio Ultimate. Currently, today, we don't advocate that you use this in a production environment because IntelliTrace, as you saw and as I described earlier, it does have a bit of a performance overhead associated with it. But in the future, we're hoping to get that down to about a 3 to 5% performance hit so that you could actually run in those scenarios. Getting back to your customer question, if you did set up Team Foundation Server and you set up a test controller and you set up test agents on their machines, then of course you could collect some of this information, but you do have to be careful about the performance hits, and it's not a scenario that we've really optimized for today. So. Yeah. Is it able to track concurrent tests that are being like multiple multi-threaded applications? Yes, it can. In fact, if you were to open up an IntelliTrace file, and I don't have one that's prepped on a multi-threaded machine, but if I was to open up that within Visual Studio Ultimate, you can actually see all of the individual threads that are running. You can see exactly when they started, when they stopped. You can see which applications were being run. You can see which versions of DLLs were actually loaded in memory at the time that we were capturing everything. So yes, we give you a lot of information, and so. I would say that if you're interested in taking a look at some of that, download my VHD, take a look at the IntelliTrace lab, and then just go off the beaten path and start taking a look at all the information that gets captured. It's quite rich. Anybody else? Okay, well, I'm sorry I couldn't get the lab management build deploy test workflow. If you come to Belgium, I'm going to be doing the same talk again. So hopefully by then, I'll get it all set up and working. If not, definitely check out the website. We've got a bunch of videos online that show this working. And once again, thank you for a great Dev Days. I hope to come back.